a las acusadas las retenía.
And outside Madrid, people will talk.
¿Está, no? ¿Por qué?
Welcome to the ADAPRA podcast. This is the second in our coronavirus special. And joining me, well, again, not in studio, unfortunately, but Mary, she's here on the other side of a Skype screen, safely ensconced in her house in the posh part of Madrid, north, and I'm in the south. But the magic of technology can bring us together and produce this podcast today. So, as we say, going out to our fans, all the way in Ireland, people will talk, regardless of the pandemic, that is the coronavirus. And how have you been since we've last spoken on the podcast? How are you dealing with the quarantine, which has since been extended until April 11th? So how are you hanging in there, buddy?
Well, much better than you, because in this postpartum country, the same as you, obviously. And everybody else fine, but well, yeah, I mean, we prefer to be out, but we are healthy, and that's all that matters.
That's true. Your sister is a nurse as well, so she's obviously working furiously at the moment, as are all of the nurses in the country, and I imagine all over the world now as well. So our best wishes, genuinely, I know we joke a lot in this podcast, but our best wishes do go out to the people on the front line of managing this crisis. But let's turn to the podcast. And obviously, we are stuck inside. And what's interesting about this is that, I mean, normally I can see you pulling faces sitting right next to me, but now I can see you directly in front of me through this Skype screen.
Still pulling faces.
Yeah, that hasn't affected your ability to pull faces. The coronavirus hasn't. But we have been trying to keep fit of sound mind and body during this taxing period. And we've been doing ballet, strangely enough. What can you tell me? Well, I mean, I did it first, so I'm kind of a trailblazer in this regard. Sans tutu or leg warmers or pink of any kind. But I think I was like a young Baryshnikov there in the living room a couple of nights ago. But you have also been on the ballet train, Mary. So can you maybe elucidate for us your experiences with this noble art form in the posh part of Madrid?
Well, YouTube, which is accessible to everybody regardless of location.
Yeah, but you probably pay for like a premium VIP YouTube or something where the speed is twice our speed. You're probably on like five. What's it? What's the four, five? You're on 7G. That's probably what you're on with your internet connection. No buffering for you.
You're the Switch / Xbox / Netflix / whatever guy. So yeah. Anyway, back to the question about the ballet.
Yeah. Okay.
PS4, fine. Yeah, it was nice. The one that I caught yesterday was stretching. So I actually didn't know it was a special session on stretching, so I was just thinking, well, there's a lot of stretching in this ballet thing, but no, it was really nice. I enjoyed it.
My toes are killing me, to be frank, because obviously when you're doing ballet at home and you've never done it before, you're on your tippy toes trying to be as delicate as possible, but if you're not used to it, it obviously takes its toll on your little guys down there. So
Did you do it?
I said, guys, plural. There's no misunderstanding.
Did you do it like in your slippers or what?
No, I did it in my socks. You know, just standard black. You know, can't go too wrong with those. that was my basic equipment. Also, well, I mean, I was unprepared anyway because, like, the servers I've been using, and this is not a paid endorsement because we've never done that on this podcast, but Mills On Demand, they're this Australian company, and, you know, you can do body pump, and you can do ballet and stretching and all this kind of stuff.
Do you pay for that?
Well, here's the thing. You can sign up for 2 weeks for free with your email, and when that that session expires, probably you could introduce maybe another email. I don't know if they track your IPS or your IPN or your whatever it is. What is it called?
Your IP address.
Your the IP address, exactly. So that's to be seen. But it's like a lot of vocabulary is in French, and then also like there's a lot of pulsing, which I think is like when you squat, but then you don't go fully back up again. You kind of have to hover, like you've been caught. For the bathroom, and then you can do like these extensions and then little flip.
And this is from, you said it's from Mills On Demand?
Exactly, not Mills and Boone. This is not romantic novels on demand. This is just...
No, but it's like Weight Watchers.
Well, whatever it is, it's a kind of a company, it's like a company that caters to extreme fitness people. These are people like who probably work out 10 hours a day.
And
eat only protein, but then they're kind of like super cheery, and they always have one person who's like, you know, who's like the basic person. So if you can't really do it like they do, you just follow this person in the back, and they always like say things like, "Oh, if you can't do it, no problem. You know, you can kind of, you know, adjust to your own pace, find your own rhythm, and it's all inclusive and things like that." You know, if you can see hear the sirens in the background, that's probably the IP scam I was advertising there on this part of the podcast. But like they do this really interesting thing where like there's like music in the background that's just what it do to the beat, which I don't particularly like because it's all techno, but also
techno ballet.
Yeah,
what
yeah
is this?
It's a monstrosity, but they also like it's so easy for them, so they could, you could be doing like a very difficult movement and they're like kind of like joking and kind of singing to the song and go, "Yeah, this is so easy." So I guess that's the point that you have to get to where you're lifting 7,000 kg on a bar and you're like singing "Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head" techno remix or something like that, and you're laughing, you know. So maybe I don't know, because I haven't been out of the house in 2 weeks, maybe that sounds bonkers and the ravings of a guy who is sick in the head, but I haven't gotten fresh air in 14 days, so it is what it is, and we're trying to, you know, do our exercise in the house. But you also have been doing this on and off, so I imagine that you have hit new heights of flexibility and strength and athleticism that you've never had before. Is it? I mean, you're like a new person now, I think. Is that what you want to say?
No, not really.
Okay.
No, I think it's essential to keep doing exercise, but of course it's not the same as going for a walk, you know. I really miss walking, but yeah, I mean, if you don't... But I was thinking this morning, it's interesting, like, about the effects of, like, mental effects of, like, being indoors. I remember when I was doing my thesis, I had to read quite a bit about... how being indoors for a long time affects your mental state, or, you know, the skyscrapers and things like that. Like, there's a lot of factors, architectural factors, that that can affect how you feel.
I know you like Freddie Mercury and Queen, so this is where you could potentially sing "I Want to Break Free" or not, or take a leaf out of your parents' book, who had the ingenious idea of walking from the sofa to the bathroom 30 times. And they got to like number 18, which is fair going. And that's one way to do circuits and keep walking and all these things. So, you know, maybe there's other people who are resorting to these ingenious techniques to keep active in the very specific circumstances. But what I've noticed in the absence of football, hashtag not a football podcast, on The Guardian, they've been doing minute-by-minute updates of, like, matches from games like from years gone by. So they did one from Euro 96, England against Germany there during the week. So you could follow it along as if it was happening in real time, which, you know, I wouldn't do that, but it's a novel idea and they're obviously trying to be creative. It's like a way back machine, you know, you're kind of like going back in time. Have you noticed anything like this, which is a very obvious response to the coronavirus? We're doing this because we don't know how to do anything else, but we're trying to be as creative as possible. And, you know, have you seen that in other areas or?
Well, about football, I heard something, but I don't know if this has happened, where the players were supposed to be, I think it was in the Spain La Liga, and the players were supposed to be playing, I don't know, like, I'm probably going to say it all wrong, but they were supposed to be playing like a video game as themselves, and use like for charity or something, I don't know, something okay, like so that I heard. They were supposed to like play, because then people were getting annoyed, because they're actually included into like the betting websites and stuff, and then people were saying, well, that's stupid, because they're doing this precisely to help people be entertained, not for people to spend more money and stuff like that. Can you clarify that, maybe? I can
turn that into the actually what happened filter. And
can you actually give us the proper piece of news?
Yeah, I think the originator was Marcos Asensio for Real Madrid, and he just, I think he, or maybe it wasn't him, because I think Sevilla and Betis were supposed to have their derby, like the weekends that the country got locked down. So two of the players from that game played each other in FIFA, and then they posted online, you know, I'll take on anybody, and then sponsors actually got involved pretty quickly, and then famous commentators in Madrid, and one person from each club in La Liga played in this tournament. And they streamed it on YouTube, and Barcelona weren't involved because they have a deal with Konami, who make Pro Evolution Soccer. FIFA, of course, everybody knows this, is made by EA, Electronic Arts. And also one other team also have, I think maybe Valencia, I'm not sure who else, but they also couldn't take part because they have a sponsorship deal with Konami. And yeah, and then apparently Real Madrid, three of the players were fighting to represent the club, but only one person could do it. And Asensio did it for Madrid. And well, it's kind of interesting because like footballers do stream and they do play video games quite a lot. But I think on one of his streams, Asensio was saying he had 60,000 people watching him play this video game. And for a lot of people, I know this probably sounds not entertaining, but it is a huge industry as well. But for some strange reason, like even though he's used to playing in front of 90,000 people in real life, him playing FIFA in front of 60,000 people, or however much it was online, made him feel nervous, you know. So, but this kind of shows how quickly, and I'm coming to the end of the sentence, don't worry, I can see your face again. This kind of shows how quickly things can build on social media, because on a more positive note, and even not on a football related note, maybe you've heard of the caremongering trend in China. You okay there? You had another facial twitch there. Can you see me?
Yeah, I was losing your speech. It's breaking.
It's cutting in and out. Don't worry. If this is on the podcast, we'll try and edit it somehow. This is a technical difficulties we're living how we're adapting to it in the moment. But have you heard of what the caremongering thing in Canada? This is like also another very fast viral moments in response to the coronavirus. Maybe you've seen something of this.
I haven't, no, but I have to say that I think what you've just described about the football was exactly what I said, so.
I think I gave some details there, specifics. But no, it's funny.
Apart from the name of the player. Okay, tell me about the nice Canadian thing then.
No, before you go on to that, because like, I mean, I just want to ask you a question about streaming. Would you watch a person doing a truck driving simulator stream where he's driving from like Aberdeen to Malaga, for example? Would you watch that?
Of course not. I mean, this is like, I think you have to be like under 12 to be interested in that. I mean, my nephew does that, watching channels where people play video games and things like that. Yeah. But I don't know. It's like when you were little and then you were No, if people were playing and then you were just watching, that's not nice. You want to play. You don't want to look at people play.
No. Watching video games can be interesting as well. But, you know, that's just our different point of view.
You're going to make me try it.
No, but I'm just saying, like, we agree on politics and the important things. If we disagree on this small issue of the entertainment value of watching someone play a video game, I can live in that world, so don't worry. We can move on from this. But the care mongering thing has also been a response to the coronavirus, because obviously you've heard of scaremongering, which is a word. Caremongering is a new word which might not survive and enter the dictionaries, but maybe it will, where people are trying to be nicer to people because of the coronavirus and because people are quarantined. And it was trending on Canadian Twitter, because we've spoken about Irish Twitter before. And what I am observing as well, with a wry smile, is, like, for example, the Irish fans during the last European Championships, they did, like, a lot of viral things, like serenading a baby to sleep or putting money in for a car they accidentally damaged. And, you know, Irish people do the whole thing, like, oh, we think we're the best people in the world, we're absolute idiots, you know, just doing ourselves down completely. But lo and behold, and I know it's not comparative because it's a football tournament and then you have a pandemic that's affecting the world, but there's videos surfacing of police officers giving birthday cakes to grannies in their balconies and taking their guitars out and serenading people up in their houses as well. So, you know, it's like a continuation of that trend. You know, I think we're going to look back on this period as well, and there's going to be so much video evidence of this camaraderie and this caremongering around the world. So I guess it would be a nice remnant of this as well, you know. So that's what caremongering is, if you wanted to know, Mary.
Of course. how could I?
Yeah.
Now I know what it is.
And just before we go on to the kind of the main meat and potatoes of the podcast, as you're sitting on your balcony, I can see maybe a towel or a jacket behind you. It's like woolen. And is this wool from? I don't know, a rare exotic animal, or is it threaded with gold, or?
It's just a normal blanket, synthetic. Oh, yeah. You know, no animals were killed in the making of this throw.
That's fair enough. Okay, well, now that is out of the way. Well, I mean, I was going to say the listener's probably aware now that we're not doing the normal part 1, 2, and 3, but considering this is the second podcast in our coronavirus quarantine special, you know, maybe they're not aware of that. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to keep talking, and then the podcast will end. And hopefully,
and then we'll hope that you can actually hear something.
Yeah, this is a comedy experiment. What I do like about recording on Skype is that we can see that you are recording the call. So if you're trying to do that on the sly, I would be on to you and I'd be able to stop you doing it if I didn't want you to record me, but I do because we're doing the podcast, so everything's okay.
What's
amazing is, like, maybe we touched on this last time round, but, you know, people are writing lots of articles about how to keep busy during the quarantine, but in reality we've been, you know, really busy because we haven't stopped working. And one project that we've been doing together is YouTube videos for YouTube, obviously, but they're scripts of historical nature, and we've been getting to do this more and more and learning the structure of doing it. And how have you been finding the experience? It's been a learning curve, but it's been enjoyable. We've been adding more strings to our bow. Would you like to carry on talking about this?
First of all, I have to say that was quite disturbing because your voice and face went completely out of sync. So you finished talking like 1 minute before your face finished talking.
If that's the weirdest thing that happens to you during this pandemic, then we can count ourselves lucky. But yes.
Yeah. And no, it was interesting. I think we already had experience with this because when we wrote the book, we basically had to simplify stories. I mean, We've written plenty of academic stuff in the past, and this is different, of course, that you want to explain things in a fun way and in an entertaining way, not necessarily fun, but entertaining. So when we were doing that for the book, I think we already, trained on doing that, you know?
Yeah.
And this is like an extra level, I would say, because to turn a story into like a very short, kind of like a 5-minute video that you're able to animate and explain to people as a little bit of history. I think that's another challenge, but well, so far, so good, more or less.
Well, you say simplifying, that is interesting, because it turns out our vocabulary is too dense, and we have to tone it down a little bit. Is this a classic case of us being geniuses?
And the world not understanding us.
Exactly. When we pass on, we'll be remembered for the geniuses that we are. You know, unappreciated in our own time and all that. But it's funny because I think it's been a very fulfilling experience. I think what's interesting though is that in our book we did write in a certain style, and it is page turning. That's what we tried to make it be. You know, we have the facts, we have the way of telling the story, but also it's dramatic, not sensationalist, but it's told in an entertaining way without devaluing the story itself. So we thought, like, well, we're old hands at this by now, you know, telling it in an entertaining way. But there's also another layer of how to make it more entertaining, where it's like the next level of adapting it. And it's kind of interesting process, because as historians, I think you and I have always shied away from, as I mentioned there a few moments ago, fun fact history, you know, where you just kind of had these fun facts that don't really mean anything. And I was making the point to you yesterday that people maybe have the perception or the prejudice that history is boring, but history is inherently fascinating. So you don't really have to use your word from the other day as well, off the camera, sex it up. You know, it has a lot of juicy things in it already, so you don't have to kind of spin it, you know, like that. But probably, you know, if you're learning a language, there's lots of like fun games, like on that app you used to use as well, Duolingo, that it's kind of like the gamification. When we spoke to Warren about volunteering, it's the gamification of the third sector. So just the way the world is going. But you know, it's just it's kind of interesting to see. Or having to do it ourselves, it's fair enough, you know, but and overall it is an enjoyable experience. The next video we're doing is from not the Second Punic War, but from the time of the Second Punic War. And you being the ancient historian, you're kind of more the expert on that, so you're kind of going to be taking the lead on that. But you know, are you excited about that? It's a momentous period in Roman history, I think.
Well, okay, let's say we won't reveal anything, but basically it's fitting because it's from the Celtiberian Wars, which is just as well, because you're Celtic and I'm Iberian, so there you go.
I'm Celtic. I don't.
Yeah, no, but like. No, I know, but I'm saying because it's Celtiberian, it's like the name of the village, of the people.
Okay.
Or is it Celtiberian? No, it's Celtiberian.
Okay, fair enough. I believe you. This is your domain. Can we touch briefly on the distinction between myth and mythical elements in history?
This is like a Chrome podcast is session one. Yeah, like people need to know myths are myths and history is history, but it reminded me, just to make it a little bit
sexier,
lighter, it reminded me of a university I actually took an optional subject, which was the philosophy of myth. And then the thing that you had to repeat over and over again was like, there's myth in philosophy and there's philosophy in myth. And I think like it can be applied to history as well. So I think long are the days when anybody thought that myths, you know, had no historical importance whatsoever.
Yeah, well, also there's a further distinction that we could make because, you know, I won't dwell on this too much, but it's also interesting just for the benefit of the listeners who might, you know, be interested in history and mythology, because we did do a script based on a story involving Marcus Aurelius. And you can see, oh, yeah, you're doing the rain. You're doing the rain motion with your hands at the white girls. I love it. It's raining. Like, what happened is like.
We only told you about this, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So like this detail, yeah, was something miraculous happened, or maybe it didn't. But the Romans won this decisive battle, and then attributed to a legend about this magic rain from the heavens, and then that got turned into, you know, God's protection for the Roman Empire, and, you know, Marcus Aurelius uses it as a way to unify the religions, the different religions in his Rome, you know, like for the Christians, there's a Christian God, for other religions, there's their God, and it became this legend that underpinned a real historical fact. And we had kind of an interesting discussion with the people who were doing the scripts with, because for them, that was pure myth. But for us, nobody's wrong, nobody's right, but it's just a different perspective, because like for us, myth is like not a separate story, but it's a very much a kind of defined category, which is something that has a moral message, you know? So it is something that is intricate and maybe messy in the humanities, where you have these things bleeding into each other, because in a sense, I guess there isn't these clear distinctions between the different disciplines. No, I mean, geography goes into that. History, philosophy is in history. History can encompass all these different things, no? I can see a pained expression on your face, Mary. Okay, well, fair enough. So what we'll do is, you know, I was bringing it up for the sake of intellectual discussion and throwing the idea around, rather than, you know, airing anything that's potentially, you know, crazy. But I admire you sticking to your mafia pact of silence here. You're a murta. So we'll take the myth, and we'll use it as a bridge into the next topic of the podcast, which is Tibet's, because I've ghostwritten a book, an ebook about Tibet's. And basically, I can't say too much about it because I'm the ghostwriter. Exactly. So I'm not even telling anything about it, the title or the focus of it. But we will touch on one myth that's in it, which we can talk about, I think. And we can go back to your discipline of the ancient world also. And we're going to be safe. Don't worry. You're flying close to the sun with me now, Mary. Not just because I can see it streaming on your face, but you're in safe hands. We're going to land, right? The wheels are going to touch the ground, and we won't be arrested for having the coronavirus in the airport. So the idea is that, like, there's a character that I discuss in the book who was a French priest. And what's interesting is, like, that he, I mean, a lot of these characters wrote their own accounts of their travels and their trips to Tibet, you know, from 1600s to you know, the middle of the 20th century. And essentially, you know, I mean, these books are available online and you can download them, much in the same way that Blind Boy from the Blind Boy podcast, he talks about Irish footprints over Europe and how you can download this book written a few hundred years ago, and you can see about Irish stories from different centuries that are, you know, forgotten but quite interesting. And these books survive as well, and they're an amazing accounts of lamas and the food and homes and makeup, you know, that, you know, woman, that the women wore in a certain way, and then the growing influence of China and things like that. But one interesting story is, like, the Tibetans talk about how one lama describes how they see the creation of the world, and at the earliest moment there's just one man, and somehow he had three sons eventually. And when this one man became very old, he died at a very great age, and his sons, you know, unsure about how to dispose of his body, pulled it apart into three parts, torso, the legs and the arms and stuff like that. And those different parts became, in turn, Mongolia, Tibet, and China. And in exchange for his story, the character in this book, this French priest, he spoke about the myth, not the myth, but the story from the Bible of Noah's Ark. Almost, had some turbulence there in this plane. It's kind of fascinating. But also what is interesting that you can also talk about a little bit more, because you've danced something related to this idea, this kind of cultural thing in Tibet, apparently. A lot of sculptures and a lot of things are made out of butter. So you have butter lamps, which allegedly help you focus the mind during meditation. But also, you know, there are moments from the Buddha's life that have been commemorated in these butter sculptures, and you can buy them, and it's a thing, you know. So that I thought was quite interesting for me. And also, I remember, and we spoke about this the other day, not just in Buddhism, I mean, the butter thing comes up in the Bible and also for the Hindus, which is where you come in, Mary, because when you're dancing Indian dances, you are doing something related around butter and praising a butter god. Isn't that correct?
Not praising any butter god, but in classical, one type of classical Indian dance that is called Bharatanatyam, and that has some stories. Or some stories can be interpreted, because a lot of Indian classical dances has a lot of theater in it, right, representing specific myths or specific stories related to different gods. And this one in particular was about Krishna, when Krishna was little, and all the things that he got up to when he was little. And one of the things he did was asking his mom for butter, like a sweet, you know. It's I don't know, you ask for chocolate or whatever, or a donut, he asked for butter. But I mean, I think it's more than just accidental that he was asking for butter. And I have heard this before, that you said about sculptures, and also about sculptures that get smeared in Hinduism as well, smeared with butter. This is quite a common thing to do. I think part of it is related to feeding the gods, and you know, the idea of providing substance. I think this is the main idea.
Also in Egyptian culture, and this is a fun English language fact, the idiom butter someone up, which means to compliment somebody, comes from ancient Egypt. And you're nodding your head in agreement here, because the pharaoh used to literally put butter on somebody so they would attract the insects while they're having their dinner or their supper or their
sandwich. I didn't know that at all. I never heard of that.
I read that online.
It's not an herb family yet?
Maybe it's spurious, maybe it's wrong. We'll let the listener do their own homework on this one. We can re-aside really. Then we get out of this conversation intact. We got through it.
Yeah,
all the potential landmines, and we just danced all over them, we balleted all over them, so it was perfect. And I think we extracted some interesting things there as well. So I think we're probably coming up to the end of the podcast, unless there's something that you want to mention at this juncture.
No, I think everybody else, we're using the time to explore some online resources, and there are some interesting things for elderly people, the museums, virtual visits from popular museums, which I know for a fact some people are really enjoying. and then there's plenty of audiobooks that we are probably going to get into talking to soon enough. So, the next week we'll have a lot of things to discuss of all the stuff that we've accessed on the internet.
Yeah, after I've handed in my top secret ghostwriting project, I'll have some more time to dedicate to these cultural pursuits, and we can talk about them on the podcast. But while we're here, why don't you tell our wonderful listeners how they can find us online?
You can find us on Twitter at ElArpaOne, Facebook ElArpaMedia, our blog. You can read our blog. We're still posting things, and also going back to some old stories, for example, the one of the Irish Olympian, which is very fitting now. So now that the Olympic Games have been cancelled, you can still read some interesting things about like early 20th century Olympics. And that's at irishlifeofmadrid.com.
Very good. You know, make good use of your quarantine or try and make the best of it. Stay safe, stay well. This is the end of the second coronavirus quarantine special at Apple Media Podcast. That's a mouthful. So me, from my little corner, my humble corner of Madrid, good luck. And Mary, from her posh parts.
Bye.